If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, Peter Greenberg here. This week on our Eye on Travel podcast, an important conversation with Arnold Donald, the CEO of the Carnival Corporation, on the state of the cruise industry, where they're going and where they're not. And with Scott McCartney, the travel editor of the Wall Street Journal, on the growing frustration of getting refunds on tickets, even when the airlines canceled your flight.
My next guest has been on this show many times, but no more importantly than right now, when we talked earlier in the show about how the travel industry has been turned upside down and inside out, how we have no more playbook or manual operations, how every day is a brave new world. I think nobody knows that more than my next guest, the CEO of Carnival Corporation, Arnold Donald. Arnold, welcome back to the show.
Peter, good to be with you on the show, and these are definitely unusual times.
I mean, not to take the symbolism too crazy, but we are really now sailing in uncharted waters, aren't we?
We absolutely are. You know, obviously, the entire industry has voluntarily, temporarily paused operations, cruise operations. So cruise ships all over the world are offshore. I'm looking out my window here on Ocean Drive where I live in South Beach in Miami, and I can see several cruise ships anchored offshore here, and the cruise ships are never in that spot. And so that's the state of affairs right now.
Now, I know that Carnival basically, you know, suspended service for about 30 days, then you did another 30 days. Is there any glimpse on the horizon as to when you can resume service?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, we've got a number of brands. Obviously, as you know, Peter, we're global, and Princess was the first, I think, cruise line industry to voluntarily pause, and they paused for 60 days when they did. So there's a number of pauses out there. And the reality is, right now, around the world, there's very little social gathering. And we join everyone else in this attempt to, you know, fight this virus. And in that context, you know, we're cooperating, of course, fully with all the medical experts around the world. And we want to be, like everyone else, part of the ultimate solution. So there's no forecast on when we're going to start up again. But once social gathering is happening again, then I think that'll be the first sign of opportunity for cruise to start again.
And let's talk about the optics here, because many of us, and I'm sure this comes as no surprise to you, remember those visual images of your ship quarantined in Yokohama. That was a Princess ship. Then you had the Grand Princess being unable for a while to actually land in California. They finally did. You have ships off the coast of Australia that are still being challenged. Even though you suspended service, we're now dealing with almost a crisis of confidence and a visual image that makes it a very steep hill to climb back on. You have how many different ships now? Over 100, correct?
Yeah, we have over 100, and the industry has over 200. And, of course, the entire industry has been impacted with community spread occurring in countries all over the world. I think very few, if any, cruise lines weren't at some point impacted by having the occurrence or the threat of occurrence of COVID on board, and then countries trying to determine how they were going to handle that.
Of course, from an image point of view, every cruise line was basically challenged over a number of years by the norovirus. Not that many outbreaks in recent years, but there was a couple of years that it was, you know, front page news. And you were being regulated, obviously, by the CDC and having to report that. But the norovirus is essentially a gastrointestinal virus that, you know, is not really going to kill a lot of people. You may be having an extended conversation with a porcelain toilet. But that's not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about a really lethal virus.
Yeah, and we've had to deal with things around the world before because we're global and we sail around the world. And so there's been Ebola and SARS and MERS and Zika and in addition to, you know, norovirus, which is more commonplace and every year and various influenza A and influenza B. And so, you know, those are things that exist in society at large. And occasionally, you know, despite the screenings we do, temperature checks, medical records, and so on and so forth, occasionally, you know, there are opportunities, you know, where people come on board and discover they, you know, have the flu or the norovirus or whatever. But we have protocols in place, deep cleaning on the ships. We have medical facilities on board. We isolate people. You know, we have crew from 145 countries. Many of them have never been exposed to measles or chickenpox. So we have to be very careful with that as, you know, children come on board and others come on board. So we're used to handling these types of things. This one, though, is global. It's affected all forms of social gathering. Restaurants are closed. Hotels are closed. Very little airport traffic, very little subway. People are being told to stay in their homes or shelter in place. So this is very different from all those other things. Those may
You're
have
right.
been very serious, but they were more isolated. This is.
I mean, I remember. Yeah, it is. I remember 9/11. It was a time when the cruise industry was uniquely positioned because not everybody wanted to fly over a large body of water to go to a destination. They were worried about terrorism. But you were able to literally reposition your assets and move them back to any number of U.S. ports. So many of your cruise ships became drive-to destinations and people cruise there. That's not the case now. You can't just reposition your ships because, as you said, Arnold, it's global.
Yeah, you know, it is global. And again, we want to stand with everyone else in the world in addressing this public health risk. As the world adapts to it and decides how it's going to handle it, then cruise, like every other form of social gathering, will fit in it. I think we have some advantages. A lot of the protocols that people are talking about in terms of hand sanitizers, washing your hands, not touching your face, you know, coughing into your elbow or, you know, your forearm and not on your hands, et cetera. Those kinds of things have been in place for a long time on cruise ships because we travel, you know, so many different places. There is hand sanitizer. There's constant deep cleaning. All those things already happen on cruise ships. So in some ways, once we're at a stage where social gathering is perceived to be the right thing to do again, then I think cruise can fit into that as are other forms of social gathering, whether it's land resorts, hotels, et cetera.
You know, this isn't a question that's particular to the cruise industry. I think it's particular to travel in general. And that is, in lieu of widespread testing or the availability at scale of an effective vaccine, when do you actually think that social gathering can return to pre-coronavirus levels?
Well, that, I think, is going to be left to medical experts who are far more knowledgeable than I am. I think the epidemiology of this particular virus is being studied intensely everywhere around the world. As you know, China has started reintroducing social gathering, Korea has reintroduced social gathering. I think the world will learn from how that's being handled and what the results are from it. Right now, everybody's just in the stage of trying to make certain that there is sufficient medical capacity to handle those that seem to be more reactive to the virus, that there are good behaviors and protocols in place that individuals can take to mitigate the spread of the virus. That's the stage we're at right now. We'll see when it is, but I'll leave that to the authorities in the various places and countries whose job it is to do that. But once it's there, then, you know, people want to cruise. And even now we have people booking, you know, for 2021, anticipating that, you know, this will pass, and people booking later in 2020, you know, because they're anxious to cruise and get out there again. And the world will get through this, but we'll have to get through it together.
Arnold, you know, we talk about so many people, and this is not particular to the cruise line. It's in travel in general. People who booked ahead for their cruise or for their airline, for their hotel, for their tour, for their safari, and are having great difficulty in getting their money back when these trips cancel. And I know the original refund policies of the cruise lines, not just yours, but just about everybody, was you had time moratoriums on them, that if you canceled within, let's say, 6 months, you could get all your money back. And then it was a scaled down level from there. But now I guess all bets are off because every cruise was canceled.
Well, for the time being, that's certainly the case because, again, we voluntarily paused, as has the industry globally, paused cruise operations. But again, if we've canceled a cruise, we've offered people the opportunity for a future cruise credit. Depending on the brand, sometimes, you know, there's a little sweetener on that, or that, you know, they can get their money back if we cancel the cruise on them and they had, you know, fully paid for their cruise.
Exactly.
And in some cases, you know, as a future cruise credit, it could be, you know, for the full fare, or it could be an onboard credit of substantial value for, you know, rebooking in the future. And that's just a typical approach. But we have 9 brands. They all do it a little differently. They all have different source markets, you know, German, U.S., et cetera, or British, and everybody does things a little differently. But fundamentally, our intent is that, you know, no one should be harmed. People are disappointed, as we are, that they're not able to enjoy the vacation experience that they had planned to enjoy. We want to give them that opportunity to enjoy it at another time, or if they prefer to either get their money back. But, it, you know, we have a lot of people are rebooking. And at the same time, you know, it's a lot of processing. You know, we sell over 13 million people a year. And
yeah.
So when these types of things happen, it's hundreds of thousands of, you know, rebookings and credits and so on and so forth. So it does take time. And I just ask everyone out there to be a little patient. I understand the sense of urgency, and most people have been very patient. But to continue to just be a little patient as we process through and try to give them back what they want.
So what you're saying, Arnold, is that if someone who's, you know, prepaid for a cruise, the cruise got canceled, and for whatever reason they can, you know, they don't want to wait for a year to rebook, they can get their money back.
Yeah, in most cases. And again, I would encourage them to their specific situation, but absolutely in most cases, they are able to get their money back or get a future cruise credit in the vast majority of cases. There could be some specific exceptions. Yeah, I don't want to make a blanket statement because they have 9 brands, different countries, different regulations, different setups. You know, so lots of different contracts out there.
I'll give you an example if I can. With the airlines, there's a U.S. Department of Transportation rule that says if the airline cancels, not if the passenger cancels, but if the airline cancels, then the passenger's entitled to a full refund if they want it. They might want
right.
to accept a voucher, but at least they can right. do that. Is that what you're saying? That
it's similar clause.
Okay,
yeah, it's similar.
I got it.
In this particular case, you know, we you know have paused operations, and this is an unusual thing. This is all unprecedented, right?
Of course.
But the intent here is this will pass. Either through ability to just manage it through the stay at home and shelter in place, combined with expanded medical capacity, so on and so forth, combined with therapies that eventually will come ultimately, you know, with a vaccine. So all of this will pass. And we have a lot of very loyal guests and people who want to experience cruise going forward. And we want to do everything to make this experience as least disruptive as possible for our current guests and future guests. And that's the intention for us as a company. And frankly, it's the intention mainly in the industry.
And I know this is, you know, everybody's trying to preserve cash. The airlines are, the hotels are. I mean, your friend, Mr. Arne Sorensen, has got the same problem at Marriott. Chris Nassetta has the same problem at Hilton. Oscar
yep.
Munoz has the same problem at United.
Yep.
I mean, you know, United's bleeding like $60 million to $80 million a day in lost revenue.
Yeah, well, you know, for us, our burn rate, which has been an offering memorandum we publish currently, is close to $1 billion a month. Of course, we're going to manage that down. And that's a lot of spend if you don't have revenues coming in. Now, we do have some people booking still for further out. But the reality is, obviously, in the current state, it's a reduced for the entire travel industry and cruises. It's no different. It's a reduced
now,
volume.
Now, earlier this week, the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund took about an 8.2% stake in Carnival. That couldn't have come at a better time.
Well, you know, we had an offering out for equity and for senior debt. We were very successful in the end with it. It was, you know, quite a bit of interest in it, multiples of what was available. And so we're very successful. And yes, the Sovereign Fund from Saudi Arabia was a participant in that. They had had a base before, and they added to their base. And we're happy to have investors and certainly happen to have them.
And, of course, I'm perceiving new ports in Riyadh. No, but maybe Jeddah.
We'll see what the future holds. But we're excited about cruise still. And we just have to get through this all together.
In what way do you think this might, when we're ready to go back and travel, when we're ready to go back and cruise, you know, you were having one of your best seasons ever. I think the industry was. The airlines certainly were. People would argue that people don't just want to travel. They need to travel. It's part of our cultural DNA. But now that you're sitting in one place for a change, what kind of thought have you given to different itineraries, different protocols about how you're going to literally steer these ships out when you're given permission to do it?
Well, you know, again, our ships, Peter, as you know, are in what we call warm layup. So they're operating and fully operational. So when it's the right time to sail again, we'll be ready to sail. The itineraries are going to be driven by, you know, the protocols in place in the nations around the world. And I'm sure that'll be influenced, of course, by the degree of persistence of community spread of the virus and so on. And so, you know, we'll just fit in with the world. You know, we're not trying to self-design ourselves anything, because in the end, it's where the world is accepting social gathering, that they're comfortable with it, that they feel is an okay thing to do. And that may not be even across the world from the very beginning. What we're waiting to see is what's available and what makes sense, because we are always in compliance. Because as you know, Peter, our top priorities and our highest responsibilities are always compliance everywhere we go, environmental protection, and the health, safety, and well-being of our guests, of the places we touch, so the people in the places we touch, and of course our crew. And so, you know, that'll determine the itinerary, where it's safe to go and healthy to go, and of course where we are in full compliance, whatever the rules are.
Sure. Whatever. You know, I was looking at your Holland America ships at one point, the Princess ships. You were having a tough go of it, at the height of this problem, with ports and cities and communities and governments not even letting you come in. So how do you turn that around?
The situation evolved, you know, as community spread, you know, went from east to west, you know, that places began to, you know, realize they had a challenge, or they saw a challenge coming from another place. And so it all evolved over a period of time. It was, as you mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast, it was uncharted waters. So, you know, I respect and understand that at different times people made determinations in the middle of a sailing. We'd have approval to go into a port in the morning, and by the time the ship got there in the afternoon, the rules had changed. But I understand that. Everybody's learned a lot. That would not be the case in most cases coming out of this, but going into it, everyone was learning. And so when you say at the peak of it, you know, the first incident we had with Diamond Princess was at the very beginning of it, when people understood very little. And while the cruise itself was a great cruise, the ship ended up becoming a quarantine ship for a number of weeks, well beyond the cruise period. And that created its own set of things. But again, we did it in full compliance with the Japanese Ministry of Health. So we are in compliance. We always will be. We cooperate wherever we go. But in the end, people will be able to travel again. And they will get to enjoy the benefits of travel, which is discovering what they share in common with others around the world and learning new cultures, and then being able to celebrate the differences.
You know, I'm looking at the Alaska market and an act that you're familiar with called the Jones Act, which was passed way back then in 1939, that said, or no ship that's not registered in the U.S. could sail between two U.S. ports without stopping in a foreign port first, which explains why so many years now, you know, your ships will start in Canada before going to Alaska. Canada now is not letting any cruise ships in. So what does this mean for your Alaska season? Are you going to have one?
Oh, we'll have to see. I think over time, we'll see. This is early April. The season normally would be kind of starting, you know, a little later than now, or around now, a little bit later. And so we'll have to see what happens. And I think, again, these are all uncharted waters, and everybody's trying to cooperate and help. Alaska is very dependent on tourism, as well as on oil, and as well as on fisheries. And all three of those have been severely negatively impacted. And so for the local people in Alaska, the folks that provide the little tours and the craft shops and so on and so forth, that, you know, give the guides for the various tours in Alaska, that's their livelihood. And similarly, around the world and elsewhere here in the U.S., the people that work in the ports, the Uber drivers, the taxi drivers, the baggage handlers, you know, the restaurant workers, all of those are people that are dependent on travel and tourism, as you know well. And yeah. So I think everyone will be looking at, you know, first, public health and safety first. And then after that, how do we, you know, manage it in a way where we can get these people back to work? Stimulus packages help. I applaud every government that's doing that, but they're not long-term sustainable. In the end, people, you know, have to be able to get back to work.
Joining us now, someone knows a lot about it, at least in terms of the impact of the travel. He's not a doctor. He doesn't play one on TV, but he is the travel editor for the Wall Street Journal, Scott McCartney. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Peter. Good to be with you.
And you're now in Dallas, and you're sequestered there. I'm here in the bunker in New York, and I can say this to almost every one of my guests. It's probably the longest time you haven't been on a plane in a long time.
That's absolutely true. I'm having dreams about it. It's really sad.
This is sick.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, one of the things that you've been working on as a journalist, what I've been covering as well, I've been inundated with complaining emails from our audience that, you know, they booked a flight, they booked a cruise, they booked a hotel, they booked a tour, they booked an Airbnb, whatever. They paid money. In many cases, they paid in full, usually with a credit card, sometimes with a check. And now they can't seem to get their money back. The airlines in particular were basically steering them to a voucher. In some cases, a voucher they could use for 2 years. In some cases, they were even doing a premium on the voucher, saying they'd give you up to 25% more than what you paid for the original ticket as a dollar value of the voucher. But I don't know a lot of passengers or travelers who willingly accepted that. After all, we're not in the business of loaning money to the airlines. We're not banks. And there's a trust factor here about so many of our audience was worried about whether these entities would still be in business in 2 years. I'm sure you're getting similar complaints.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of money at stake in this. You know, some people have thousands of dollars, $50,000 in a cruise, school groups that have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars wrapped up in it and can't get their money back. And some of these kids are graduating and won't be around to book the trip with their high school group. It's a huge problem. It's illegal in a lot of instances. There are regulations in the United States for airlines flying in and out of the United States. It applies not just to U.S. carriers, but international carriers who do business here. Also regulations in the European Union that say that if the airline cancels a flight, the airline has to offer a refund. You can take a voucher if you want, but you have to make a refund available if the consumer wants it. And it's really simple. You know, if you order something at a retail store or anywhere else and the retailer can't deliver it, you get your money back. back. There's no reason why anybody should, you know, sell you something, not deliver, and then get to keep the money. It's really outrageous.
I know. Well, what's really ridiculous is that the airlines, first of all, they know the rules. It's a Department of Transportation rule. It's even in their own contract of carriage. If you look at the Delta Airlines contract of carriage, it says if Delta cancels a flight, and I want to be clear on this, I mentioned it earlier in the show, but I'll say it again, the airline has to cancel the flight, not you. But if the airline cancels the flight, then on the Delta language, it says the passenger at the passenger's request is entitled to a full refund, even on a non-refundable ticket. And time again, every airline that I can think of either didn't volunteer this information or refused to do it. Now, last Friday, about a week ago, a little more than a week ago, the U.S. Department of Transportation made an announcement reminding the airlines of the existing rule and threatened to take enforcement action if they didn't play fair. I have started to see, and maybe you have too, Scott, the airlines start to write those checks.
Yeah, that's right. So Lufthansa was one of the first that said for tickets sold in the U.S., they would now offer refunds. They hadn't been before. And quite significantly, United reversed its proposal. United's been making up rules sort of left and right throughout this crisis. And they imposed a new rule, violating their own rules. That said that on international tickets, if they canceled the flight, they'd give you a voucher for a year. And if you didn't use it in a year, then they would give you the refund. But essentially, they'd get to hang on to your money for a year. And that was counter both to the DOT rules and United's own rules. And so they did reverse that, and they've gone back. It's still a problem that a lot of international airlines are not doing. And it's worth noting that some airlines have done this right all along. And it's very painful for airlines to give back cash. But American has been doing it from the start. Delta's been doing it from the start. When the airline, as you said, when the airline cancels a flight, they have to refund. And they knew the rules. And a few of them said, we will abide by the rules. And others said, forget it. We can't afford it. So we're not going to do it. It's not fair to the consumer who, you know, can't afford to loan airlines thousands of dollars at a time when they may be losing jobs, businesses may be threatened. There are lots of reasons why people need their own cash that they're entitled to.
Exactly. And by the way, this even applies to frequent flyer awards that people had cashed in to fly on flights. United at one point was charging people $75 penalty to redeposit their miles. Now United has relented and they've waived that fee, thankfully. But the bottom line is you do have rights. You can always write me to peter@petergreenberg.com. You can go to the U.S. Department of Justice's that'll be the next stop, the U.S. Department of Transportation's website, and you'll find the rule right there. It's on their website, something you can remind the airline of when they want to say no. And the fact they're basically flaunting the no to the Department of Transportation, saying, go ahead, take enforcement action, fine us. We'll keep the fines held up for 6 months to a year. It's crazy.
Well, it is, and I think that's a great point. The Department of Transportation has not been aggressive about enforcing consumer rules.
We were still continuing our conversation on one of our audience's favorite topics these days, the art of getting a refund when you've paid for a flight that the airline then cancels. And by the way, this also applies to cruise ships. It applies to hotels, Airbnbs, tour operators. Everybody is desperate to hold on to cash. The question is, how do you finesse a refund, especially when, guess what, you deserve it. Scott, you know, I've seen this happen with the cruise lines now. Their first response was a voucher. Their second response was cancel any time up to 48 hours before the scheduled cruise leaves and we'll give you a voucher. Third one was we'll give you 50% back. And now, slowly but surely, the cruise lines are now giving people, if they want it, and believe it or not, they do want it, a 100% refund.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the things that's important for people to remember is you got to be patient with them. And so the cruise lines have, like other businesses, have limited windows for the refundability. So, in fact, I had one cruise line I was talking to, anything out to May 11th or so, well, they would refund it. But May 11th, a cruise departing Italy, May 12th, nobody wants to go on that. So I think those kinds of restrictions will move out as we get closer to May sailings.
You're right.
June sailings. And so, you know, there may be wisdom in waiting to rebook your trip or get that refund until the policy works in your favor.
And not only that, and not only that, Scott, you're right. I mean, there's no point in jumping the gun. This is a game of chicken in which you don't need to blink. Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
No, you may not get your money back right away. So you might as well wait. It's not there's not a great rush. And if there's not a penalty for canceling at this time, wait until the policy works for you.
The other thing is this. Don't depend on published schedules right now. An airline will tell you their flight in May is operating on time when, in fact, the reality of it is there's a high likelihood that none of their schedule is going to be operating realistically until June 15th. So wait, if you're holding a ticket for May 25th, why would you cancel now? Wait until May 18th, and by that time, I guarantee you the airline will have canceled it. Or if not, as Scott suggests, their policy may have changed to be more beneficial to you. Same thing with cruises. I mean, a lot of cruisers are saying they're leaving in May, June, and July for the Alaska cruise season. Not so fast. Right now, Canada is banning all cruise ships. And for those people who understand the Jones Act, which goes back to 1939 for those historians listening in, it was designed to protect the American Merchant Marine by requiring any ship not registered in the U.S. to stop at a foreign port while sailing between two U.S. ports. It was allowed to, you know, let people unload the ship and make more money on the docks. Well, guess what? With very few exceptions, I think, a couple of Mississippi River boats and one cruise ship in Hawaii, there are no ships in the United States sailing from the United States, registered in the United States. So if Canada is banning cruise ships, how are you getting to Alaska without stopping in a Canadian port first? And right now, the entire Alaska cruise season is hanging in the balance.
Yeah, and the cruise lines, as you well know, are really in a precarious position. They were, because none of them are registered in the U.S., they were exempted from the U.S. bailout legislation. So there's no bailout money for cruise ships. There is for airlines and for others. And Carnival in particular has been working to raise money as best they can. Airbnb, interestingly, is doing the same thing. We reported the other day that they actually borrowed some money at more than 10% interest, very high interest rates for a big company. So they are in the fight of their lives for survival.
Well, isn't it interesting that a company like Airbnb that was so highly valued by the market, I mean, outrageously highly valued by the market, has to go out and quickly borrow money at a high interest rate, which gives you an idea of whether or not Airbnb was ever making any money in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. It's really tricky. Airbnb has, to its credit, been more generous with refunds than some others. I've heard a lot of complaints about VRBO. VRBO basically left it up to their owners. And guess what? They're not being very generous. At best, the company asks owners to refund 50% and give 50% of the purchase of the rental as a voucher. Well, that's thousands of dollars for a lot of people. And they're not going to go. They want their money back. The voucher's not good for them.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Ion Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because Even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.